By their mercy, all these devotees ordered me to write of the last pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because of their order only, although I am shameless, I have attempted to write this Chaitanya Charitamrita. Purport. To write about the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not an ordinary endeavor. Unless one is empowered by the higher authorities or advanced devotees, one cannot write transcendental literature. For all such literature must be above suspicion, or, in other words, it must have none of the defects of conditioned souls, namely mistakes, illusions, cheating, and imperfect sense perceptions. The words of Krishna and the disciplic succession that carries the orders of Krishna are actually authoritative. To be empowered to write transcendental literature is a privilege in which a writer can take great pride. As a humble Vaishnav, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, being thus empowered, felt very much ashamed that it was he who was to narrate the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Ti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nirvishesha Shanyavadi Paschati. It's time for a story. This purport reminded me of a story which takes place in Los Angeles, California, in 1972, where I had the great fortune of being at that time, and Prabhupada stayed there, I believe, 3 months. And at that time, there was a devotee named Mangalananda. And Mangalananda was a musician. And at that time also, I believe, around that time, there was a group of musicians gathered together and formed what was called the Road Show. And they were performing in different places. And there was a recording studio called Golden Avatar, and that was the original place where all the lectures of Prabhupada were archived, recorded, edited. But they had a full-on recording studio because one devotee named Krishna Kanti used to be a recording engineer, so he wanted to produce Krishna, aside from Prabhupada. He was the one who recorded Prabhupada also. You ever see Prabhupada being recorded in what looks like a real recording studio? That was Krishna Kanti. So we have Krishna Kanti to thank for the fact that so much is being recorded. And the really good recordings of Prabhupada, like Krishna Meditations, were recorded by him. And so they had brought Prabhupada to the studio to do a recording. And at that time, Mangalananda was working on a recording. But the movement was so young that no one had done any music, rock and roll, no one had done anything in English. And so that was kind of considered taboo. You don't do English, you do Bengali or Sanskrit or combination Bengali-Sanskrit. In fact, anything different in the early days of the movement was looked on with great suspicion. And if you did it, you would get criticized, guaranteed. There's no question. If you did something that no one has ever done before, practically speaking, there would be always a few people who would be suspicious and say, this is not, we shouldn't do this because it's never been done before. So this was a real departure. So they had gone to Prabhupada and they had told him that he's writing songs in English. And you know, sometimes you hear Prabhupada say things, but he's saying things in response to what was told to him. And so then you quote, Prabhupada said this, but you don't know what he was told. So this is an interesting story about how Prabhupada responded. So in class, I was there personally, in class, maybe you were there, maybe you remember, 72 in Los Angeles, Prabhupada said, to the old temple room, and he said, you cannot write songs, or I think it was songs, or poems, unless you're transcendental. So is there, it was obviously in response to Mangalananda's music. He was writing songs. You know, there was an album called The Change of Heart. You know you're not that body. You know that one? That spirit soul. The body's just a lump of flesh destined to grow. That album, and there are other ones like that, or whatever. Sweta Dweep, song about there is a distant place called Sweta Deep. Sweta Dweep, where the Lord lies in cosmic sleep. And O Govinda, within my heart. Celestial herdsman. Cowherd boy, celestial herdsman. Like that, different songs. So, we can assume that Prabhupada was told that he's writing and he's concocting, etc., etc. So Prabhupada made a very heavy statement. Unless you're liberated, you cannot write songs. So in everyone's mind, that kind of finished Mangalananda's career. Do you remember that? Were you there? It was pretty strong. Yeah. So Prabhupada was pretty strong about that. So everyone assumed, well, Mangalananda's career is finished. And I'm sure a lot of people were happy about that. So Mangalananda wasn't obviously happy about it, and he obviously didn't think that he was saying anything that was against our Siddhanta in the songs. So after he was helping Krishnakanti record Prabhupada's, and right before Prabhupada was getting ready to leave, they had done some tracks. And they said, Prabhupada, would you listen to these? Because some people are saying this is not bona fide. So Prabhupada listened to it. How does the Change of Heart song go? You remember the lyrics? It's about a butterfly who changed, and a moth who changed into a butterfly. What are the lyrics?
Oh, I don't remember that one exactly.
Anyway, yeah, yeah. But the Govinda song. Govinda song was all about the universal form. O Lord, the sun's effulgence hides your face. The darkness of the night conceals your eyes. Your arms and legs reach all through outer space. And the dawn displays your beauty in the night. So it was poetic song about the universal form. So they played, I don't know what song they played, and they had one about Arjuna in the battlefield. And then Prabhupada listened to it, and he said, this is nice, this is good. This is, I don't know if he said it's wonderful or what, I don't want, you know, but he liked it. And then he said, Prabhupada, but the devotees are saying it's not bona fide. And Prabhupada said, the cows will moo, but don't bother. That was his. So the point, and then also, if you look at Back to Godhead magazine, especially the older ones, like I first came in touch with Krishna consciousness in 1969, and long articles, very philosophical articles. There was one article by Prabhupada, and the rest were written by devotees. And Prabhupada said, "Your writing is as good as mine because you're my disciples." So it wasn't that we couldn't write. In fact, we were encouraged to write. And then Prabhupada said, write every day. Don't worry if it's going to be published. Write for your own purification. But he definitely encouraged us to write. So it wasn't that we weren't bona fide. And so the writing was empowered because it was an order of Prabhupada. So then the guru orders you to write, and you write to represent what he taught. It's you're empowered. It's bona fide. Right? Just like during Prabhupada's time, nobody accepted disciples. No one thought about it. Well, maybe one person thought about it. But the rest of the devotees didn't think about it. So, and then Prabhupada gives the order, and then you do it. And And people look at you and think, why would you do that? That's like, why would you want to take that position of a guru? And the only reason you want to do it is because, it's not that you want to do it, but because your spiritual master orders you. Then you do it. Otherwise, you don't do it. Right? As we said before, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that if you're a Vaishnava, you can't become a guru because you have to correct devotees. You have to criticize them and correct them. So you can't do that. That's not Vaishnava. So Vaishnava can't become a guru. So then why would you want to become a guru? And then you have to criticize devotees. And Prabhupada used to say, it's my duty to criticize you. He said, therefore, guru is a thankless task because that's not the nature of the Vaishnava. But then the guru orders you, you do this, and then on his order you do it. That's all. Right? So, Krishnadas Kaviraj is saying the same thing. He said, here I am shameless that I think I have the audacity that I can write about the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. But why am I doing it? Right? Or I have the audacity to be a temple president. I was temple president. I was 20 years old and 8 months in the movement. So who do you think you are, Mahatma? You have the audacity to be the temple president. No, but we didn't do it because we had the audacity. We did it because we were asked to do it. And that's Vaishnava. So he's saying the same thing, that here, you know, I'm shameless that I think I can write about the pastimes of the Lord, but I've been asked to do it by all these Vaishnavas. So that's why I'm doing it. That's the position. Now, think of Mother Yashoda. What does Mother Yashoda do? One of the main things Mother Yashoda does is feed Krishna. And how does she feed Krishna? Does she go in the kitchen and go, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and phew, prasadam appears. You might think she does that, or she does. Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya Radha Ramana Hari Go Govinda Jaya Jaya, and then prasadam appears. No. She gets vegetables, she cuts them, she puts them in a pot, just like we do. She puts in spices and ghee, right? Isn't that how she cooks? Yes? She uses fire. You know, the story of Damodar, the milk was boiling over, it was on a fire, it was in a pot, it was milk from a cow, it didn't, you know, milk didn't rain down from the sky, the pot didn't just appear, the fire, well, the milk also, it had a mind of its own also, that's another thing. But Mother Yashoda cooks. She uses a spoon to stir it. She uses a knife to cut the vegetables. She uses ghee. She uses spices. Uses a pot. Puts it on fire. Just like we do, right? So what's the difference between her cooking and everyone else's cooking? Because externally it looks the same. What's the difference? Difference is why she's doing it. So what did Prabhupada say? He said, you don't write to become famous. Now, I'll tell you a story about becoming famous. I don't know if I told you the story. It's a very interesting story. Before I was a devotee, I, you know, like every normal teenager in the West, or many of them, I sat around all day playing guitar, singing songs, and doing other things that go along with that, that we can't mention in the temple room. So, you know, and like every bona fide teenager, do you want to be a rock and roll star? Then listen now to what I say. So you all want to be a rock and roll star. There was even a song about it. Do you want to be a rock and roll star? So, we want to be a rock and roll star. And then, you know, of course, we become devotees. And so I donated my guitars. They were sold. Okay, it's gone. Forget about it. Pick up the mridanga harmonium, you do kirtan. And then, at one point I thought, if we had a band that became famous, then we could do concerts to sell out crowds, and there'd be like 10,000 people, or in those days you'd have big B-ins, who knows how many people, right? Or, you know,
Stonehenge or whatever. And all these people would pay money. And then you could distribute so many books. You know, 10,000 people come, that's 10,000 Krishna books in one concert. Wow, what if you do a concert a week? That'd be 500,000 Krishna books a year. And then what to speak of how you could influence the minds of the younger generation. Because, you know, look at the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. I just read something really funny as a side point. There's this book called The God Illusion Machine. You know that book? Anyone see that? God's Illusion Machine. It was published in Ireland. I got a copy. And the devotee said that Mick Jagger long ago sang "I Can't Get No Satisfaction," and even though they sang it, people go to hear the song to get satisfaction. To hear the song "I Can't Get No Satisfaction," they go to listen to it to get satisfaction. But anyway, so many devotees, they said, you know, I listened to George Harrison's music, maybe not your generation, but, you know, my generation. So I became a devotee, or I became influenced. So I don't know about music now, but music, when we were younger, there was a lot of poetry and a lot of meaning, a lot of deep Bob Dylan, Simon and Garfunkel, you know, they're actually Beatles, they're actually saying something, you know, meaningful. So I thought, we'd write these songs and then we'd become a popular band and we'd influence the thinking of the whole generation of young people, like, you know, the Beatles did and this and that. So I was the temple president, which gave me the opportunity to write Prabhupada a letter anytime I wanted. So that's one of the benefits of being temple president in those days. So I wrote Prabhupada a letter with my plan. We become a famous band, we influence the thinking, younger generation, and we distribute so many books. And that's what I was thinking. I was just thinking in terms of preaching. And Prabhupada writes me back and he says, don't try to become famous. And I thought, I'm not trying to become famous. I just want to make Krishna famous. But Prabhupada understood my mood. He said, try to make Krishna famous. Don't try to become famous. So Prabhupada saw within my plan that spark or seed that I didn't even realize was in my heart of the desire to become famous, which was obviously there before I was a devotee. Because everyone who plays the guitar wants to become famous, right? What's the fun of playing if people don't go, you're fantastic, you know? Especially nice if you're a man, if the women do it, right? It's double bonus, isn't it? When I wrote Prabhupada, I was thinking, I just want to preach. And Prabhupada said, he caught me in the act. He said, don't try to become famous. Try to make Krishna famous. So he stopped the whole thing. He said, forget it. He said, if you want to do music, do kirtan. Do ecstatic kirtan, like that. So it was the idea bad? Not really. You know, you couldn't, you know. But Prabhupada saw there was a seed, the wrong seed of motive. So he said, no, don't do it. It's the wrong motive. You want to be famous. And if we do something to become famous, we're finished. Yes? That's it. It's over. The party's over. Krishna will take his little cane and pull you by the neck off the seat and you'll be finished. So here, Krishnadas Kaviraj, he's exhibiting this. He said, just look at me. I'm so shameless that I'm doing this, that I'm writing about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And he probably understood as well that if he does this, then he's going to go down in history as the author. So, but on the order of guru, one will or will not do something. One will do something that could actually make one very famous and remain humble. You know, there's a morning walk, Indradumna Swami tells the story, and they were telling Prabhupada of the prediction that the Senapati will come, the general, Mahaprabhu's general will come and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And Prabhupada, very innocently and childlike, said, do you think they were talking about me? So, isn't that interesting? One of Prabhupada's Godbrothers, I think it was Krishnadas Babaji, on Prabhupada's disappearance day, he told the devotees, he said, "Do you know why your spiritual master is so great? Do you know why?" And he said, "Because he has done what no acharya, even Nityananda and Mahaprabhu themselves, they haven't done. He spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. No one has done that. That's why he's so great. And Prabhupada's doing it. It's happening. Mahaprabhu's prediction is coming true. And Prabhupada, in his humility, is saying, do you think they're talking about me?" So, if we act on the order of Guru, and that's the motive, then we're safe. This is why I'm doing it, because my Guru wants it. Then I'm safe. If there's any other motive, it's not pure devotional service, and it's dangerous. So everything in bhakti is about why are you doing it? Anyabhilashita shunyam. You study nectar devotion. If you study nectar devotion, you learn that the Paribhasha Sutra, the essential verse upon which all instructions of nectar devotion are based, is this verse, that pure devotional service means its own only motive is to please Krishna. And if there's any other motive, then it's contaminated. It's not yet pure. Contaminated by the desire to achieve something material, karma, or gyan, the desire to become free from suffering, liberation, or free from suffering, or mystic, to gain some mystic power. So, another aspect, what I was thinking in terms of this verse, another interesting principle, is we know that Prabhupada quoted the maxim, purity is a force, and that was not Is anyone, the four principles, books are the basis, utility is a principle, preaching is the essence, utility is a force. As far as I am aware, that Prabhupada didn't originate that. That was said by somebody else. Who knows who said it? Was it Mahatma Gandhi? Does anybody know? Maybe, yeah. You know, Prabhupada did quote a lot of other people, but we don't know that he quoted them, because we always say Prabhupada said this, but you find out he was quoting someone else. But anyway, the principle of purity is the force, it comes out in this verse. And I don't know if you're aware, I think many of you are aware of that. At one point, I'm not sure, maybe it was 1975, Prabhupada basically said, "We have enough devotees." You know, does anyone know? It's the boil the milk letter. Does anyone know what year that is? Sri Sri Radha Gokula Ananda Ki Jai. Has anybody got a... What? 75? It was 1975. So in 1975, the movement was expanding by leaps and bounds. Probably by 1975, they're probably... How many temples do we have by 1975? Probably 80, 90, 100, maybe. When I joined the Hare Krishna movement, there were 17 temples. And many of those temples meant four people, three people. So it wasn't a big movement. I calculate in 1970, I calculate when I joined, when I first came in 1969, my calculation is maximum 300 people in the whole movement. And most of them showed up at Rathyatras. We had a few hundred devotees at the San Francisco Rathyatra in 1970. That was most of the movement. Most of the movement was there. So the movement expanded tremendously. So thousands and thousands of devotees by 1975. Then Prabhupada wrote this letter, which you could call the boil the milk letter. And he said, we've expanded enough now. So he was concerned about expanding and creating so many disciples who aren't well trained. And Prabhupada sometimes criticizes God brothers. You know, you have a temple, you create so many neophyte disciples, what's the point? So that concern was there, that we're creating so many disciples, who aren't well trained. And Prabhupada's concern was also, we're creating Brahmins who are not actually Brahmins. Right? And Prabhupada said, we are criticizing the Brahmins because they wear a 2 paisa thread. And how can we criticize if we don't live like Brahmins? So then Prabhupada said, let us now boil the milk, meaning let us train and cultivate Krishna consciousness more deeply. So that is a example of let's make sure we maintain purity. And then Prabhupada made it very clear that what does the Krishna consciousness movement have that you won't find anywhere else, or what's it supposed to have that you won't find anything else, and what is its value? Its value is the purity. Now there's this guy named Simon something from New York. I don't know if he's well known in England. Simon Schnuck something neck. Schnuck, Schnick or something. Jewish name. And apparently he's quite well known in the world of marketing. And he said, people don't care what you do as much as they care why you do it. And he's written a whole book on it. He's been on TED Talks. He's out there. And this is his message. They don't care what you do. They care more why do you do it. And he gives so many examples of companies whose motive resonates with people. This is why we do it. To challenge, I think Apple is something like challenge the status quo. Is it? What's Apple? Challenge the status quo. Or something. He gave an example. Apple. Who knows Apple? You don't use Apple here? What's Apple's motto? Anybody know? What? Think different. Yeah. So he said, why, you know, Apple's motive, what is it? Why do we do it? Think different. Be different, you know, or challenge the status quo or something. He said, so many people resonate with it. They wouldn't even buy a Mac unless that was, you know, their mode. Their MO, modus operandi. So, if you take that as an example and you say, okay, how does that apply to Krishna consciousness? You could see from studying Prabhupada, especially studying his letters, that the main thing that Prabhupada said we have that sets us apart is our purity. And the purity means, why do you do it? Why are we doing everything? Right? Because it's motivated by the desire to serve, the desire to please Guru and Krishna, and to serve the world. Yes? Brahman. What does a Brahman mean? What is a Brahman? Doesn't think about himself. His only concern is the world. Like when Maharaj Angira went off to the forest and there was no king, then the Brahmins were concerned. Who's going to be the king? And then Vena, he came to power, and he created havoc. Now the Brahmins are concerned. He's creating havoc. So they're always concerned about the welfare of people. So Prabhupada was really concerned in our movement about purity. And time and time and time and time and time again, he mentioned it. And here, look at this example. It's very interesting. If you think about it, when you think about this principle, purity is the force, what does that mean? Look at the Bhagavatam, look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you want to know what it means, it's everywhere on every page. Look at the actions of the pure devotees. Then you understand. Look at Krishnadas Kaviraj. What is he doing? He's saying, I would never do this if I wasn't ordered to do it. I would never think to do such a thing. And even I'm doing it, I feel shameless. But because they've ordered me, I'm doing it. So here's a nice example of a definition of purity, right? He's doing it on the order of the Vaishnavas to satisfy them. And feeling not, well, they've chosen me. That means I must be better than everybody, right? Okay, let's say we have something very important to be done, extremely important for the continuation and preservation of the Hare Krishna movement, and you're chosen, you're the one. We have a meeting, we get all the devotees, the congregation, hundreds of people, and they say, you are the one to do it. How will you feel? Yes, I'm the man. Will you feel like that? So, a little bit, I'm sure, right? Okay, I'm honored, but that means I must, I guess, they think I'm better. So I guess I am. I must be, right? I mean, they chose me. That's the conditioned response. So when we talk about purity as a force, here's such a nice example, isn't it? He's chosen by the assembly of Vaishnavas. These great, great Vaishnavas are saying, you're the one to do this. And how is he taking it? As a humble servant. Okay, I will serve you. And I'm shamelessly doing this by your order. What a good example of purity that is, isn't it? Now think about it. We sleep 6, 7, 8 hours. We do sadhana 3, 4, 5 hours. So about half our day is sleeping and sadhana, isn't it? That gives us another 12, right? So purity is a force. How do we examine our purity in those other 12 hours? How does that, okay, I chant my rounds, that's good, that's pure. I go to Arati, that's pure. I study Prabhupada's books, that's pure. What about the other 12 hours? How do we examine purity? What does that mean, purity? How do you know what it means? Do you have so many examples in Shastra of what it means? Like there's one nice example that I love so much. It's the story when Mahaprabhu was so pleased with Rupa Goswami that he asked all the Vaishnavas to bestow their mercy. You know that story? He said, bestow your mercy on Rupa Goswami. So, sometimes when a devotee becomes very advanced, we're not happy. Yes? Why aren't we happy? That ever happened to you? You join with somebody, you're the same age, same time, but 10 years later, seems like they're up on the moon and you're down in some hellish planet. And so they're being acknowledged and you're just trying to tie your shoes. You're still trying to learn to tie your shoes. And you may not like that because you kind of feel like you should be getting some of that acknowledgement. Anyone ever have that experience? That's common, right? If you're in the material world, if you're still around after millions of births, you definitely have had to have that experience. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here, right? Because it's envy that keeps us here. So that's a common experience. And sometimes it's extremely difficult to be happy if someone advances. As weird as that sounds, sometimes it's happy to be happy that someone else is happy. Is that strange? No, that's material consciousness. Right? This person is advancing and they're being honored and they're successful and they're happy and blissful. How does that make you feel, Prabhu? I don't like it. They're not so advanced. Why are they getting all the... anybody could do that. Anybody could distribute 100 big books a day. When was the last time you did it? Don't talk to me that way. I could do it if I wanted. I'm doing other things. That mood, right? I could do it if I wanted to. Okay, that's a good one. And in this story, in Bhagavatam, it struck me so much because Mahaprabhu was saying, bestow your mercy. Bestow your blessings on Rupa Goswami because he's getting the mercy of Krishna. He understood my heart. And everyone just showered mercy and praise with this, you could feel the purity just by reading the story. You could feel the purity. Everyone just was so happy to bless. Was it Rupa Goswami? I haven't read it. I think it was, does anybody remember that story? Anyway, Mahaprabhu was asking his devotees, bless, I think it was Rupa Goswami, bless him. Bestow your blessings and well wishes on him. So everyone was blessing him and well wishing. And then you could see, this is purity. The heart, there's nothing in the heart but just well wishes for another devotee. So when we say purity is a force, think about what's in our books and you'll see so many examples of what it means, that purity is a force. And this is the thing that we have in ISKCON. And if we lose this, then we're finished. It's gone. You know the story about the two sadhus who lived on the beach? And they were just sadhus living on a beach. And there were a lot of reefs in the ocean, and a lot of boats would get stuck on the reefs. So the sadhus started doing was they started directing the boats around the reefs. And said that a lot of the boats would come and, you know, they would stay with the sadhu overnight. So they were saving a lot of travelers from shipwreck and so on. And they became, who knows this story? Raise your hand. Maybe it's an American story. You know? Anybody? Okay, good. It's kind of boring to tell a story if everybody knows it, half the people, so you don't know it. So it's a good story about purity. So, you know, the sadhus were helping so many people, and they're just living on the beach. They have no shelter, you know, maybe they're just living under the shade of a tree or whatever, and through the rain and the heat. So some people said, why don't we construct a building for them so that they don't have to live on the beach? And then all these travelers who come in, you know, who've been traveling for days and days, this is, you know, the olden days, you're traveling by sailboat across the sea, they'll have a place to stay. So there were so many people who were supporting what these sadhus were doing that they built this beautiful place. So it has so many rooms, and it's really nice, right? And so travelers could come and stay there, and the sadhus could live there. But what happened was that a lot of times there were no ships. There were certain seasons ships weren't going on, and all these people wanted to hang out with the sadhus and just be there, you know, to support them. But they're starting to get bored of just sitting around, so somebody put in a ping pong table, or someone put in a chessboard and caroms. You have caroms here, you know, little, I don't know, you know, a pool table, whatever, you know. So gradually, it started to become a recreation center. And then when these travelers were coming in, there were a lot of unsavory characters, you know, pirates and so forth. And they were dirty, they had, you know, unclean habits, smoking, drinking, this and that. So a lot of the people that helped build the place and were part of the organization were kind of uneasy about all these sailors and so forth coming in, because they kind of mess the place up and get it dirty. And so you get the picture, right? So at a certain point in history, the initial purpose of this was totally lost. Nobody even remembered why this place was established. Except two people remembered and said, the purpose for this organization has been lost. And they left the organization and they went to another beach and they did the work. They went down the beach and they did the work of directing the ships. And guess what happened? Some people started to support them, and they built a place, and then they got bored. And so it's a nice story to show how the purpose, why are we doing what we do? That's the most important purpose, important thing. Why do we do it? It gets lost. You know? And why does ISKCON exist? Purity. And so if you study Prabhupada's letters, this point is very clear. Very clear. Prabhupada said, if we maintain our principles, if we maintain purity, we will be successful. Because he said, no other organization has this level of purity. And so I just invite you to realize that outside your sadhana and your other bodily maintenance, you have 12 hours a day. And within those 12 hours a day, we need to manifest purity. And purity is within those 12 hours a day, mostly, much of what we're doing is interacting with other people. And it's a great opportunity to manifest our purity in terms of support,
in terms of humility, in terms of service, in terms of overcoming any kind of possible negativity within relationships and dealings and so forth. As we see, especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's all over Chaitanya Charitamrita, the dealings the devotees have which are based on affection. And so I just wanted to offer that thought, that here in our books, when you ask, what did Prabhupada mean by purity as a force, you'll see it everywhere. It's just, you know, amazingly there. And then we see how much we fall short of those examples. And then sometimes we fall so short of those examples, we even think those examples aren't for us. They're just examples. You know what I mean? Who's that example for? Oh, it's just an example. It's like, you know, well, it's a nice story. I mean, Thakur Haridas, he's being beaten to death and he's praying for the people that are beating him. That's a nice story, isn't it? And we can't even forgive a devotee who, you know, didn't say hello to us yesterday, because they should have said hello and they didn't. And now we're all, and Thakur Haridas is being beaten to death and he's praying for them, right? So is that just a story? Well, it was a nice story, and you know, but this devotee didn't smile to me. Yeah, I'm not going to talk to them anymore. Is that why the story is there? So we can say that's Thakur Haridas. No, that's the examples which we're trying to emulate. Can't emulate it tomorrow, but it's an example. Now, some devotees say, but you know, that's artificial. You can't imitate that. That would be wrong. But that's not actually true, because the examples are there for us. Okay, you can't imitate it. But examples are there for us to act upon, even if we're not on that level. That's the point. Like we're doing this marriage seminar. So one of the principles in the marriage seminar is, this is just the way I am. Take it or leave it. You know, that's what happens after you've been married a few years, right? When your spouse realizes, oh my God, you're a lot different than I thought you were. And then you say, can't change, this is just how I am. All right. You may not be able to change, but you can change your behavior. Okay, I'm like this, but you can change how you act, right? How many devotees, a little shy, humble, Hari Bol, never talked, locked themselves in a closet their whole life, and then they came to the Hare Krishna movement, and like 3 days later, get in the Sankirtan van, we're going to distribute books, here's your bag. And you know, you've been living in a closet your whole life, you never talked to anybody, you're afraid of people. And then, you know, a few months later, you're out there, excuse me, sir, you know, you're super bold, and you know, you're not extroverted, but you would act that way because that would help your service. We've seen that. How many times have we seen devotees do that? Right? So it may not be your nature to be Thakur Haridas, but at least try to act like him a little bit. You know, I know, you know, it's probably you're not naturally inclined to pray for people who kill you, but the example's there. Can't we at least try to be a little more like that? You know, okay, the devotee didn't smile. It's okay. It's all right. It's okay, you know. Okay, you don't have to forgive him. He didn't try to kill you, but just, you know, he didn't smile. It's okay. So the point is that sometimes we look at these examples and we think, I can't relate to this, but why is the example there? It's there for us, right? Okay, you can't. You're not on that level within your heart. But we can try to act a little more like that. Come, okay, he's up here. That's very high. I'm down here. Can I come a little higher to that? That's the idea. Purity is a force. We need that. That's what is going to attract people. Isn't it? That's what we have, you know. We're not the best managers. If we were good managers, we'd have 10 of these manners by now. Yes? Right? We're not so great. You know, we're not such great kirtaneers. If we were such great kirtaneers, how come we're not top of the pops chart like Krishna Das and Jayutal and all the others? You know? You know, how come we're not, you know, these big speakers, Robin Sharma, this one, Tony, you know, how come, you know, maybe someday, but
But we may not be, you know, Tony Robbins, when he speaks, there's like 5,000 people all paying like $2,000. Do the math, Prabhu. That's a lot of money for 4 days of work. You know, credible. You know, we may not be on that level, but what do we have? Potentially, we have purity, and that's more valuable. And that's what Prabhupada wanted us to maintain. So I just wanted to offer that, that this example is one of many examples in our books of purity. So I will end here. Is there any questions or comments?